Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Sabbath. You all wide awake?
Yes.
Somewhat. I don't think my mic is on, is it?
No.
Okay. You know it's not when the sound guy tells you it's not. Good. All you watching online? Good. There we go. Welcome. If you are a visitor, hopefully you got one of our gift bags and you're feeling like you're home. That's kind of what we're looking for when we started this service. We want to learn to be an authentic expression of the kingdom of heaven. And so we're in a new series. That's what we do. We like starting different series. This one is called Our Story. And once again, Paula did a fantastic job with our video. This series is going to be a little different. We're trying something new. Because here's the thing. You get to hear my stories every time you come here. But what's beautiful is you all have your own stories. And rarely do we get a chance to dig into your stories. Usually, when you come to church, you shake someone's hand. You say, Happy Sabbath. And you say, How you doing? And they'll respond, Great. And that's the end. And you stay kind of on the surface level thing. And you never go past it. But this series, what we're going to do is interesting. We picked a theme for each week, and what we're going to do with that theme is we've given individuals an 8-minute segment where they'll share a story. This is not testimony time. This is not the time when someone tells their whole story and you feel like the plane has landed and then it's back up again. It's landed and you're thinking, when is this over? That's not what this is. This is times where we follow a theme, and each speaker shares a short story that fits with the theme, and it's you who are sharing. We're not bringing in any big-time speakers. It's you. You're the celebrity. You're the star. You guys dig? This is going to be fun. And I'll, of course, do a wrap-up at the end. And so our theme today is subtle changes, because we understand change actually happens over a course of time. If I were to ask you, when did this thing change for you? Most of the time, it's not the big moment. It's all the tiny ones that led up to it. And so today, our presenters are going to share some tiny moments that caused some subtle changes to occur. And so our first speaker I'm very excited about, his name is Keith Weber. And many of you know him as the voice that comes up here and does announcements, and you laugh and you think, he's so clever. And he really is. We love Keith. And so Keith has a long story. You should get to know him. Talk to Keith. He's a great man. So I'm not going to add any more to it. Keith, give Keith a round of applause as he comes forward.
Test. Tyler's mic. Two. Awesome. There we go. Thank you guys for having me. So, real quick story I was asked to share. This took place. This is a coming-of-age tale of a young man with, no, this happened after my first year of college, right? I was invited to go work at Camp Winnikeg. You know, summer camp is awesome. So, okay, great. First time there, very excited. Lots of people showing up, you know, people from different schools, different universities, whatever. But, you know, the girls, usually very sweet. The guys, though, you know, at this age in college, you meet another guy, you're sizing each other up. What's up, dude? What's up? Yeah, what's up? You know, it's all crazy, right? Whatever. But it happens a lot. So eventually, after the first week, which is a like all team building exercises, whatever, you get to know people, you know, and then it's like you get to know your team, you bond with them, and then they're dropping intros to their friends. So it's all good. But even after this, there was one guy that hadn't met in my team. I hadn't met him yet. From PUC, right? This was in Massachusetts. Right, so this is East Coast, and I'm from Texas. He's from California guy, okay. But let's call him Ryan Van Hook. So I'm like, this guy is good at everything I'm good at. Okay, so I'm like, what? Like, okay, all the sports, obviously. Fine, just the regular, you know, sporty sports. But like all the, like the archery, he's good too. Like the sailing, the canoeing, the, you know, everything that you're doing. And I'm like, what? You know, horseback riding, okay, I'm better at that. But then, like, water skiing, like, he's awesome at that. Like, better than, I'm like, so we started to get into this, I mean, I started to get into this, you know, like, just this battle over nothing. I mean, what? He bested me in crafts. Give me those beads, you know. And then I realized, you know, what am I doing to my summer? You know, I slowly start to think, like, what's the point of, I should be enjoying my summer. I should be, you know, he looks like he's enjoying. He's just doing it for fun. So fine. From then on, I, you know, stopped seeing him as such a competitor. He's more of just a guy who enjoys the same things. Okay, so, you know, start to become friends. I say hi more often. Yeah, now we become friends. Okay, fine. Everything's fine. One of these days, we're talking, right? And he mentions that his dad was head park ranger at Yosemite. So I was like, really? And I share with him that when we first arrived in the U.S., I was a kid, but we went on, it was like a week-long thing with the church from Burbank we were attending. So, you know, they'd go to Yosemite, they'd camp out, you know, stay in a cabin, whatever, very nice. We'd gone, and we did the hike, you know, the falls hike. You go to the first level, you know, at that level, my mom has, you know, so many sisters. So my mom and one of my aunts, you know, they, that level, they turned around and went back with all those kids who were, like, dying. And then another aunt, whose husband actually was the pastor there, her and her, you know, few months old baby, they decided to climb to finish to the top, you know, to the top of the falls. So they get there, and you know, the day was so hot. So, you know, some of them were swimming and stuff like that. There were these pools. And so she was like, hey, you know, switch places with me. She told her husband, you know, hold the baby while I go in and cool off. So she went in there just to cool off, you know, kind of floating. And the current is so subtle. And it started to pull and pull. And, you know, people noticed, they shouted at her. You know, when you're lying on your back, your water's, you know, over your ears, whatever. So some say that she tried to get up at the last minute, but tragically, she went over the falls. And, yeah, it was horrible. When I shared this, my buddy just, you know, looks at me, and he's like, huh. He says, you know, that's only happened to one person, one lady in the last, I don't know, 18, 20 years. And he says he remembers that because it was his dad's dogs that found, you know, her body like 8 days later. So this was an interesting moment for the both of us, this event that, you know, neither one of us, you know, we were both kind of connected to it. Neither one of us knew about the other one at that time. But years later, you know, you come to this, you know, kind of crossing the road, and it's like, huh, I totally would have missed that if I had kept seeing him as, you know, just the guy that I wanted to beat. You know what I mean? So it was interesting. It just made me think, since the smallest thing, you know, can give you the greatest satisfaction, how much has our pride taken away from us? I've got a couple minutes. You guys want to hear another one? Shorty, all right. Thank you, the two of you. All right. I studied Southwestern biology, so once for ornithology class, you know, we went bird watching to South Texas. Great. Near Louisiana, real swampy, okay? So we're going to go to the trails one day, and we, you know, as soon as we get out of the van in the parking lot, we start seeing the signs, you know, alligator warnings. Some people are like, whoa, you know, we're gonna stay. But I said, come on, this is the land of the free, home of the brave, baby. So, you know, the rest of us decide to go. All right. We start on the trail, and we start to notice, you know, there's no fence between the trail and everything, you know? And so another group decides to go back, you know, and wait. But we weren't going to give up. So about a minute later, when we were about to give up, because there was nothing but, you know, just endless trails and more ponds, it was just trail goes down the center, and then, you know, ponds maybe 50, 60 feet on the other side, we see stuff. We start to notice there's, on the other side, there's maybe 5-6 foot alligators, you know, little ones, swamp cats, as they call them in Florida, okay? But they're just sitting there, and we're like, wow, cool. So we take pictures, and, you know, but after a while, even that gets boring. So, okay, we're just going to keep going. We're about to turn around, and we see an older couple coming around a bend. So we're like, okay, let's ask them, hey, is there anything worth seeing, you know, further on? And like, oh, yeah, around this corner, there's a really big gator. So, okay, take the word for it. We go around, sure enough, there's this, I mean, 10 to 12 foot gator just, bleh, you know, just sitting there on the other side of these, you know, these things, the reeds and stuff. We're like, whoa! So His head was, you know, kind of behind some reeds, though, you know, some plants. So, you know, I wonder if I grab a stick and I move to the edge of the water. I'm just like, you know, teasing it now. Okay, all right. We've all been to the zoo and you've seen these things with like pennies and cigarette butts on their heads. Nothing's going on. The kids are upset. You know, they want to see them dance with the hippos. But as soon as I did this, it's like, oh, he lifted his head and turned to look at us. That's awesome. So I was like, wow, did you guys see that? Took more pictures, but you know, really, he was still kind of the reeds a little bit. You know, the shoulder, you wouldn't want the full body shot. So I'm like, okay, I need to get closer to the water. So just slowly, I get a little closer to the water so that there's more effect, you know, so the stick has more, you know. So I start like, and it's like, now he's like, you know, he starts taking steps towards us. Wow, that's amazing, right? To see it in action. So I said, okay, just a little bit more, just a little bit, you know, just subtle steps. I'm just gonna, you know, just really, really give this guy, maybe we can, you know, maybe we can't get him to dance with the hippos, right? No, okay, so I get a little closer and I really start, you know, stirring the water, whatever. And then, yeah, he gets all in and he's, you know, just swimming to us, you know, 50 feet and 40 feet, moving nothing. His tail is just back and forth. And I'm like, oh, this is incredible. So I said, okay. About halfway through, so about 30 feet, he, you know, goes into submarine mode, you know, where he looks. So he sinks, and you can only see his eyes and his little nose, right? But, I mean, it's okay. Come on, we're biologists, so we know what we're doing. I mean, you know, you can still see kind of the wake of the water, so coming. So, you know, he's approaching. So I'm like, okay, you know what? I mean, he's too low now. I got to see this. So I know what you're thinking, but I was born without foresight nor hindsight. So I get down on the edge on my knees, and I'm like, really? Because, you know, you want to see this. So I'm like, still stirring, of course. Just keep stirring. So when he gets about half that distance, about 75% of the way through, talking maybe, I don't know, 20 feet, then 15 feet, then he like submerges completely. You can't see anything. The water's black. You know, a lot of leaves have fallen from the trees. They're like decomposing. So the bottom is black. The water's murky. And you can't see anything. And I'm like, hey, are you guys getting this? I turn to the left and I just see soles of the shoes. Just, you know, everybody's running. They deserted me. They totally Gethsemane'd me. It was like, you know, took off. You know, because I'd given my camera to somebody else because, you know, you got to think ahead at least a little bit. But so I was like, anyway, when I turned to the left to see if they were there, I don't know if you can zoom in the camera and you can see on my shoulder, there are no scars because he didn't get me, no. But, no, so what happened is he gets closer, and at that moment, maybe it's my amazing situational awareness, or maybe not. But no, I think, okay, maybe this is the time. This is the time. Get up now and run now. So, yeah. I noticed the wakes, you know, the little ripples that he's formed are starting to get close and kind of hitting the shore. And I'm like, I don't know, what is he doing? Like getting down on the ground, getting ready for the lunch. So at that time, yes, I decided to stop getting closer, like get up and then actually leave. I know, boring story. I missed my Steve Irwin moment. But the point of that is, yes, subtlety can also kill you. So thank goodness I'm here to tell the story. But that was that. Thank you guys. You've been great.
Subtle changes, like turning your microphone on. Subtle changes, they sneak up on you, don't they? They're subtle, that's why we call them subtle. And before you know it, you will look back and you realize that and that happened. I wasn't even aware of it. It came up on me like an alligator. And so we're going to continue with subtle changes. We have our own Pastor Sarah May Colon, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about a sense of home, this subtle change in which we begin to understand home differently. So she's going to go through this subtle change of what home meant for her.
I won't even fake that I'm going to stay seated, so I'm just going to, yep. As most of you guys know, I wasn't raised in the continental USA, and this was always an interesting thing because I have a birth certificate that says I was born in the USA, right? And I have parents that continuously remind me that I was born in Worcester, Massachusetts, and I should be proud to be a New Englander. However, I don't really know if these are valid forms of identity half the time. And so often I would just ignore that and say, like, well, you know, whatever. Sure, that's that. Because you see, my parents aren't exactly American in a lot of senses. My dad was born and raised in Puerto Rico, in Mayagüez. My mom is from Newfoundland, which is barely Canada. And my brother and I spent most of our informative years in Côte d'Ivoire, West Africa, and Moscow, Russia. So you see, the problem always came around when we would come to the US and people would ask questions about where we were from. I used to just believe that the world was my playground and I could really do whatever I want. Or, like Alanis Morissette so brilliantly puts in her album, I am a citizen of the planet, right? And so here I am, I'm going through life and I'm trying to figure out how to answer this basic question of where are you from, where's home? And every single time I came to the USA, I'd be sitting in Sabbath school and that question would come and I would mutter my way through it because I didn't know what the question actually was. Was it where I was born, where my parents are from, like what my heritage is, how long I've lived somewhere, where I'm living now, what I consider to be home, what I feel most comfortable calling home? These were all things that were going through my head. And so very often I'd just be like, here. Or all of Africa, because I would just say Africa, never the country, because people never even knew where I was growing up. They didn't know the names of the countries. And I struggled with this, and it would bum me out, and then people would try to be really encouraging, and they'd say, like, well, home is where your hat is. Home is where your heart is. Home is where your pillow's at. And the problem that I had with these sayings was that, well, hats make my head hot, and I don't like them. My heart is really a little too big sometimes, and so I really like most things, and so I can't really define that as anything. And I have a bigger brother who is mightier and stronger than me, and so he would steal all the pillows. And so really, none of these worked out for the analogy of where home was, and I would get really frustrated with these things. And so I just kind of gave up on it all. And I didn't really realize how devastated and confused I was by this question until this one particular day. My brother one day woke up while we were in Moscow, Russia, and decided that he was homesick. Now, I remember looking at him like he was an idiot and being like, for what? Like, what are you homesick for? And he was like, for the USA. I want to be an American. And I was like, okay, well, we listen to country music, right? That's American. We eat mac and cheese like it's going out of business, so that's American. We get peanut butter for Christmas, so that's pretty American. What more do you want? But no, he really struggled with it, and he decided that he was going to be sent off to a boarding school in the USA. My parents approved, off he went. Within 6 months, my brother called, and he was like, Sarah, I really miss you, and I really wish that we could be in the same continent again. And then he began to get more and more homesick. And pretty soon, a conversation started coming up that I didn't understand, and my parents were trying to figure out how to solve this problem of Ivan being homesick on a different continent. Well, he was already fully in school, and there's no way really around it. And I kind of ignored the conversation, partially because I'm out of control and a slightly ADHD and doing my own thing. And I was planning our shenanigans, and I couldn't wait till Ivan was getting home, so I had all the adventures logged in place so when he got home, we could take over the world. And then the dreadful conclusion and the definitive answer came. We're going to mail Sarah May to the U.S. to keep Ivan company. And I remember my parents telling me this, and I just kind of sat there and stared at them. And I was like, the USA? No. See, because the USA was a cool place to visit, right? It was so cool because we got Frosted Flakes, and we got peanut butter, like all you could eat peanut butter, and endless root beer at every single restaurant. And it was like a magical wonderland, but a land that I only would go to visit. I did not want to live there. And so now this moment came where my parents were like, okay, well, you're leaving in January. You're going to go finish the school year out there, and you're going to go with Ivan, but he's going to be at the boarding school, so you'll only get to see him like twice a month. But it'll be really great because you'll be together. And I was like, no, none of this is a good situation. I was so mad. And I remember the day came where I was packing, and my suitcase was pretty much packed, and I had my passport on top, and I was like, this day cannot be real. This cannot be my reality. And I was mortified because I didn't really know what to do because this was no longer a vacation spot. This was going to be my home. And I remember I actually lost my passport at one point that day. Within, no joke, like 30 seconds, my dad came in and was like, missing this. I decided that I needed the specific hair tie that happened to be at the bottom of my suitcase. So I unpacked the whole suitcase. And then when I turned around, my mom had repacked it so ninja-like that I didn't even know. And it was right there, ready to go. And so finally I said, okay, mom, dad, I need to do one more thing out of tradition. I need to go down to the corner kiosk. So they said, fine, you go. You have about 10 minutes. Come back. I ran out of the division office. I grabbed Maxime, the guard, who was like my closest friend at the time, and we ran down to the corner kiosk, and I got my frozen Snickers bar. Now, mind you, it's frozen because it's cold, not because they freeze it. So there we were, munching on our Snickers bar, walking back to the division office. He went into his guardhouse. We said our goodbyes. I walked into the division office, and I remember I walked past the first stairs, and I looked over, and I saw all of the offices of the division office. And I looked down, and it was empty, and I was sad. I went up one more flight of steps, and I looked, and down that hallway, there are doorways to people's homes that I'd been living with for the last couple years, and the washers and dryers that I've done all of our laundry on, and I was about to take a step up when suddenly it hit me. Washers and dryers. This is the solution to my problem. And so I run down the hall and I crawl into the dryer. Okay? I slam the door shut. I'm sitting there in a ball with my Snickers bar. And I'm like, well, if they can't find me, I can't get on the plane. And so I sat there for quite some time. I finished my Snickers bar. I began to hear voices and people yelling my name. And people walked by the dryer. And I was like, success, nailing it. I licked out the rest of my wrapper, and I sat there a little bit longer until there was this overwhelming sense, and I sneezed, and I was found, and then I was in the van, and I was en route to the airport, and I was sad, and I was waving goodbye to my parents, and I started crying, but not because I was going to miss my parents, but rather because I really didn't want to go to this land that everyone said was the country of dreams. I didn't want to be on that plane anymore. And I remember we landed and this family picked me up. And from then on, I was living with two different families as I finished out the school year, one that I would go to school with during the week and one that I would live with on the weekends. I remember being traumatized by the cereal aisle where I would stand there in like a slight panic trying to figure out which cereal to buy. I remember getting shell-shocked by all of the things that were happening around me, and especially the fact that school was like 8 hours long. And boring. I had never experienced such things. I'd always been in a missionary school. And so my attitude that was normally pretty go-lucky and whatever happens, happens, and this is an adventure of life, kind of started derailing and crashing down rather rapidly. The conversations began to come up. I remember I would be asked a question, and if I didn't know the answer, I would respond in Russian because I figured, well, they couldn't tell me I was wrong. But instead, the teachers thought that I was cursing them out or saying something inappropriate, so soon I was being sent to the principal's office. And then every so often, we would be doing the Pledge of Allegiance, but I didn't really know the words, and so I just would refuse to say it. And so then they were like, oh, she's unpatriotic, and they'd send me to the principal's office. And every so often, I would just be standing there and looking at the history book and being like, that's not the correct translation. And I would point it out, like, your history books are flawed. And then they would send me to the principal's office. So soon emails and letters started being poured into my parents' inboxes, and they started getting these notes saying, your daughter is unpatriotic, and this is obstructing her education and the education of those around her. And I remember my parents sending me emails like, are you okay? How's everything going? And I was like, fine, it's fine. But I was unpatriotic. I wasn't happy to be here, and I was bummed out, and I was angry, and I was hurt because nothing about this world around me that I was currently living in meshed with anything. I didn't connect with the people my own age. I didn't know what to do with any of that, and it started getting more and more negative. Finally, my parents moved to the U.S. I moved on from that school, went to high school. Soon graduation rolled around. And I remember at graduation, a couple of my guy friends that I had been friends with forever, they told me, they're like, you know what, I'm going to skip college and we're joining the Marines. And I was like, Marines, how cool. Now, mind you, we'd talked about this for quite some time, but none of us had made that decision. And I wanted to join the Marines only because I wanted to learn to shoot things and to be sneaky, but not necessarily to hurt anyone else. And then I also realized that I'd probably want to have a conversation with the person that I was supposed to be fighting to find out if I was really angry enough to fight them. And so it soon became this realization that I really should never join the Marines. But maybe my friends should. So that's what they did. They joined the Marines. And we called each other all the time while they were at boot camp. They called me while they were on deployment. We sent back and forth copious amounts of letters. And I still remember, like, hearing their stories. And I would revel in the worlds that they were seeing. And I would start crying at the worlds that they were seeing. And it was this crazy experience for me because I wasn't able to participate in it. It was just a story that I would hear. And I still remember this one particular day, one of my closest friends in high school, Chris, called me. And he was like, "Sarah, I want you to pick me up from deployment." He's like, "My family's coming down to North Carolina. It will be super great. Please come. It will be awesome." And I was like, "Okay." So we loaded up the vans and I got in with the family and we drove down to North Carolina. We checked into our hotel. And then once we were checked in, we went to this massive stadium that they had given us the address to where all the buses were going to come and park and the soldiers would appear. So we were in the stadium. I walked in and I was overwhelmed. It was full of hundreds and hundreds of people and there were American flags everywhere and there were families and there were women and children and there were people with like American flags painted on their faces and huge signs with like, "Welcome back and we love you." And everyone was just talking and chattering. And it was like this common factor that everyone was so excited about. And I remember sitting down with those two siblings of Chris, Mandy and Justin, and we were talking and then I started talking to the people beside me and I admired what they had going on. They had so much patriotism and they were proud that their kids were defending their country. And I was thinking, that's so beautiful. These communities, these families, these people, they have such a great, great moment of trust and they believe in this and they're so passionate. And so we kept talking and then I started talking to Mandy and Justin about how smelly Chris would be. And then suddenly there was an interruption, this loudspeaker. And it said, "Everyone may exit to the right. The buses are arriving." Now, as you can imagine, the volume that was like here went to like here. It was crazy. The place went psychotic. Everyone jumped up. They were grabbing all their stuff. They were arranging their signs. Everyone was super stoked. They were like barreling out of that auditorium, that stadium, out onto the big, huge parking lot. And I remember I like sauntered out because I was like, "Well, when I get there, I get there." And as I walked out, I remember seeing bus after bus after bus, about 15 buses parking in a row. And I remember standing there being like, "Wow, this is pretty cool. This is really intense." And just as I looked up, there were soldiers hanging out of the buses and they were waving and people were cheering and it was beautiful. And I remember standing there and as the Mandy and Justin yell in my ear, "We're going to go split up and find Chris." I was like, "Deal." Took about 10 steps forward and I stopped. Because soldiers began to pour out of those doors of those buses. And I watched families just run to them. I watched newlyweds kiss for the first time since their wedding. I saw people pick each other up and twirl them around. I saw daddies meet their babies for the very first time. I saw kids crawling all over their dads with the biggest smiles on their faces. And I saw the soldiers that were so hardcore and epic bawl, just start crying. And I stood there completely frozen because I didn't know what to do with this image. And I just dropped the welcome back sign and I stood. And I was trying to take it all in and I was so overwhelmed and shocked. I didn't know how to process this information. And I was watching all of this unfold and suddenly I turned to my left and I see this American flag just in the wind right beside me. And that's when I knew I was home.
Changes occur and they're often subtle. In Ecclesiastes, there's this poem in which the author says, "Seasons change, seasons go. There's a time for this, there's a time for that." How many of you have ever been to a place other than California and experienced seasons? Yeah, we have like endless summer here, don't we? But let's say Michigan, I have some family here from Michigan, they experience the seasons. My uncle, he will be sitting there during spring, and he'll be enjoying spring, but he, like many people in Michigan, they'll pick up something because the birds, he's crazy over birds, by the way, loves birds. We'll go out on family vacations and things, and we're all enjoying whatever there is to enjoy. He's looking at the birds. He loves the birds. But he'll notice something interesting. The birds will change their songs. New birds will be coming in. There are these subtle changes that occur between the seasons. And so before you know it, spring moves into fall, fall into winter, winter back into spring. And you have these subtle changes over and over again. And it's interesting, when you look back at your life, it's not the huge moments, it's usually the tiny steps you take that have been the change that's occurred in your life that's brought you to the place you're at. And sometimes it's positive, and other times it's negative. The psalmist says there is a season, there's a time, there's change all around us. Jesus, he shared messages with subtleties that changed everything. It changed the way we view economics, politics, religion. It changed everything, but it was so subtle, wasn't it? For instance, Jesus says this. Well, first of all, have you ever heard this? The Bible is basic instructions before leaving earth. Have you ever heard that before? Yeah, but not according to Jesus. Because what this does, this idea of basic instructions before leaving earth, what that would essentially say to me is that this life is just a waiting room. And at some point we get to get out of there. And so everything in the scriptures is about me leaving. But Jesus shares a subtle difference in his message. He says the kingdom of heaven is here among you, within you. It's right now. So this beautiful book, the Bible, is not a book to help us exit. It's a book with beautiful life-giving messages of how to be here, presently, living a kingdom life here and now. Subtle changes I want you to chew on a little bit. Let me give you a couple more. We've often heard this: you are freed from slavery, pain, brokenness. You are freed from. Now, that sounds nice, but the reality is, when you are freed from, if that is your motto, then you can actually become very inactive in your own life. Well, I've been freed from that. Jesus' message was, go, restore, repair, help the widow, the orphan, the stranger within your gates. You are freed not from, you are freed for the purpose of bringing life and hope and repair to those around you. It's subtle, but it will make all the difference. Another thing Jesus shared, a subtle difference. Oftentimes we talk about the cross and we say Jesus came to die. But if you look at the messages of Jesus, very rarely does he talk about his death. You won't see Jesus say, I came to die on a cross, to be murdered painfully, to go through all this. I came for that. You won't see that as much as you'll see this. I came that they might have life, and they might have life more abundantly. Jesus came knowing he would die. When you get that subtle difference, you no longer ask the question, why did God need to murder his son? Well, he didn't. Jesus came knowing he would die, and yet loved you enough to still come and share those beautiful life-giving messages of how to live here and now. Live that way into eternity. Last one. We are sinners in need of rescue. Many of you have been told that all your life. But when you look at the teachings of Jesus, you don't see Jesus saying you're bad, you're evil, you're decrepit, you'll never amount to anything. Jesus doesn't share that message. Here's what he says to his disciples before he leaves. He says, you will do what things in my name? You will do greater things in my name. Because when Jesus looks at you, when God looks at you, he says, this is a beautiful creation filled with potential. And so the beautiful message is not that you are decrepit, evil, and you need saving. It's that you are walking, living, breathing miracles. And you and I, we need direction. And when you get the subtleties of that message, it changes everything. And so today we talked about subtleties. And so today my hope for you is that you might look back on your journeys. And you might look for those subtle moments where the divine has shown himself over and over and over again. And you might look back at your journey and say, I am so thankful for the life that this has led me to. And it's been these subtle moments, these divine moments that have brought me here, and I'm so thankful for it. And when you do that on Sabbath, you will have something to praise the Lord for. Amen? Those subtle differences, they're game changers. They mean everything. And so today, again, my prayer for you is that you might learn to find the divine in the subtle all around you. May God bless you today.